Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Code of Capital by Katharina Pistor examines how wealth is built and protected not only through markets and innovation, but through the legal tools that define what assets are and who can control them. Drawing on examples from finance, corporate ownership, intellectual property, and land, Pistor argues that the most powerful forms of capital are those that have been coded in law to generate durable advantage. She highlights the role of elite legal expertise in turning ordinary resources into assets that can be leveraged, shielded from risk, and prioritized over competing claims. Rather than treating inequality as an accidental byproduct of globalization, the book frames it as a predictable result of legal choices that distribute rights, liabilities, and enforcement. By focusing on contracts, property, trusts, corporate law, and related doctrines, Pistor shows how the architecture of modern capitalism is built inside legal institutions. The result is a compelling account of how law quietly shapes economic outcomes and why reform requires rethinking the rules that make capital so powerful. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, capital is made, not found, the legal coding of assets. A central idea in the book is that capital is not simply any valuable thing, but an asset that has been legally engineered to produce and preserve wealth over time. Pistor distinguishes between resources and capital by emphasizing how legal rights transform something like land, a loan, data, or a business idea into an asset with predictable returns and strong protection. This coding is done through legal modules that can be applied across contexts, allowing owners to structure control, income streams, and risk allocation. The book underscores that these legal techniques are not neutral. They systematically favor those who can afford sophisticated legal work and can access institutions willing to enforce their claims. By treating the creation of capital as a legal process, the author reframes common economic narratives that attribute wealth primarily to productivity, merit, or technology. Instead, the focus shifts to enforceable rights, priority in insolvency, and the ability to exclude others or extract fees. The topic also clarifies why two assets that look similar in practice can differ dramatically in value, depending on how the law recognizes ownership, transferability, and remedies. Understanding this framework helps readers see inequality as embedded in legal design rather than only in market outcomes. Secondly, the key legal tools, property, contract, corporate forms, and collateral, the book maps the core legal instruments that repeatedly appear in wealth creation. Property rights define exclusion and control, contracts coordinate exchange and allocate risk, and corporate law creates entities that can own assets, enter obligations, and persist beyond individual owners. Collateral and secured lending rules then determine whose claims are paid first when things go wrong, making priority a powerful source of advantage. Pistor explains how these tools can be layered to produce strong protection for asset holders, including insulation from creditors and the ability to move assets across jurisdictions. Limited liability and entity shielding, for example, allow investors to cap losses while preserving upside, which encourages risk-taking but also shifts costs onto others. When paired with insolvency rules and financial engineering, these modules can turn uncertain claims into tradable instruments that are treated as reliable stores of value. The topic also highlights how legal form shapes market behavior. Investors, lenders, and intermediaries price assets based on enforceability and priority, not just on underlying economic activity. By tracing how these doctrines operate together, the book shows that much of modern wealth is a product of legal architecture that governs ownership, governance, and repayment in the real world. Thirdly, lawyers as the engineers of capitalism and inequality, Pistor assigns a pivotal role to elite legal professionals who design the structures that convert resources into durable capital. In this view, lawyers are not only dispute resolvers, but also architects who craft contracts, entities, and ownership arrangements that anticipate risk and secure enforcement. The book describes how repeat players with access to top legal talent can continually refine these structures, creating a competitive advantage that compounds over time. This dynamic helps explain why sophisticated actors often emerge from crises with their positions intact. They are able to ring-fence assets, renegotiate liabilities, and rely on legal privileges that prioritize their claims. The expertise is also portable, moving across sectors such as real estate, corporate finance, and intellectual property, which spread similar patterns of advantage. Importantly, the topic emphasizes that the distributional consequences are not limited to any one industry. When legal engineering is used to privatize gains and socialize losses, inequality deepens and public trust erodes. Readers are encouraged to see professional incentives, institutional networks, and access to courts as part of the political economy of wealth. By focusing on the people and practices behind legal coding, The book makes the system more concrete and reveals where reform efforts might realistically intervene. Fourthly, state power, courts, and the global reach of enforceable rights. A recurring theme is that private wealth depends on public authority. Legal rights become valuable because states recognize them, courts enforce them, and regulators support systems that make transactions credible. Pister argues that capitalism relies on this partnership even when it presents itself as private ordering. The book also explores how certain legal systems and jurisdictions gain outsized influence because market participants trust their courts, contract doctrines, and institutional stability. As a result, actors often choose governing law and forums that maximize enforceability, which can export legal standards across borders and concentrate power in a few legal hubs. This contributes to global inequality because parties with less bargaining power must accept rules they did not shape, while mobile capital can shop for favorable protections. The topic further explains how crisis moments reveal the backstop of state power when central banks, emergency measures, and political decisions stabilize markets and preserve key institutions. The book invites readers to question the assumption that markets are self-sustaining and to recognize that enforcement choices are policy choices. Understanding the role of the state clarifies why reform is difficult. The same institutions that protect capital are also responsible for maintaining economic stability, creating tension between fairness and system preservation. Lastly, Rewriting the Code, Reform Pathways and Their Trade-offs, the book does not treat the legal foundations of capital as immutable. Instead, it raises the possibility of recoding by changing the rules that grant priority, enforceability, and protection. This topic centers on how reform might rebalance private rights and public interest without collapsing investment and innovation. Potential approaches include tightening constraints on asset shielding, revisiting bankruptcy priorities, limiting abusive forum shopping, and improving transparency around ownership structures. The topic also implies broader democratic questions: who gets to set the rules, and how can legal change keep pace with sophisticated private engineering? Pister stresses that incremental reforms can be undermined if actors can easily move assets or repackage rights, so effective change often requires coordination across institutions and sometimes across countries. Another trade-off is that strong legal protections can support economic development by encouraging investment, but excessive protection can entrench incumbents and suppress competition. Readers are prompted to evaluate not only what is legally possible, but what is politically feasible, given the influence of powerful stakeholders. By framing inequality as a consequence of design, the book suggests that alternative designs are possible. The challenge is building coalitions and institutions capable of implementing them while maintaining credible, fair enforcement. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want to understand why inequality persists even when economies grow, including policymakers, lawyers, finance and business professionals, journalists, and curious non-specialists interested in the hidden mechanics of capitalism. It also suits students of political economy, because it connects everyday legal doctrine to large-scale outcomes like wealth concentration and crisis resilience. The practical benefit is a sharper lens for interpreting headlines about housing booms, corporate power, intellectual property fights, and financial bailouts. Instead of seeing these as isolated events, readers learn to look for the underlying legal privileges that create priority, protection, and portability for certain assets and owners. That perspective can improve civic judgment, career decision-making, and policy evaluation by clarifying which reforms address root causes versus surface symptoms. Compared to similar books that focus mainly on technology, globalization, or individual behavior, The Code of Capital stands out for pinpointing the institutional plumbing that turns value into durable wealth. Its emphasis on legal design makes the argument actionable. If inequality is partly coded, it can be recoded. For buyers, the value lies in gaining a durable framework that applies across sectors, not a single issue or moment in time. If you would like to support Katharina Pistor, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.